Suzanne Corby is a Wiccan priestess of over 38 years, initiated in an Egyptian temple dedicated to Isis in London. During this time, she performed many rituals to the goddess, studied her rituals and traditions, and worked with Sufis, Druids, healing and shamanic practitioners to understand their ways, and regularly practices and teaches sacred dance. Her Wiccan workshops throughout the year in London teach the ancient pagan festivals that form the Wheel of the Year, and she reads and teaches tarot in person and online. Her pilgrimage to the ancient temples of Isis and Hathor in Egypt in 2012 allowed her to fulfill a lifetime desire to perform the ancient rituals of the goddess in their own temples and rededicate herself to the goddess Isis and Hathor and their path of love, transformation, and wisdom. Welcome to A Year with the Goddess, Suzanne.
Hello, hello, Kim, and hello, everybody that's listening.
It's so wonderful to have you here to begin this program with us, and especially to talk about Thulis. I know that you live in England, and you know I haven't actually visited in person the baths that they've erected around the springs of Thulis, but I know that you have. So where do we begin talking about Thulis?
It does begin with Bath, Kim. That's absolutely the place that she is completely connected to. She's the goddess of the hot sulfur springs there. And it's funny that the town itself is called Bath, isn't it? And that just, it's really kind of funny. But the Romans built the Bath over the place where the water emerged. But it's clear that the Celts venerated that place in a very big way before the Romans came along. But the Romans built baths around the spring there, and the city became a spa known as Aqua Thulis, which is the waters of Thulis. So even the Latin name for Bath had her name in it. And as well as that, the actual baths themselves were dedicated to Thulis Minerva. So even when the Romans came along and added their own version of Thulis, which is Minerva, which I'll explain why that is later. But when they added that, it's interesting that they put Thulis first, which is unusual. Normally they would put the Roman name first, but they put the Celtic goddess's name first. And that's really a mark of how venerated she was there. There's no question this was a sacred site. And there's a causeway leading to the source of the spring, a man-made causeway, and that's pre-Roman too. And some coins that were thrown into the water were Celtic. So it's clear it's a very old place. It's very sacred to this goddess. The only thing is, Kim, is that the Celts had an oracular tradition, so we don't know very much about her in terms of stories or mythology. It was all handed down orally, so, you know, nothing was written about them. But that doesn't mean we can't find out in our own way.
What have you found out?
Right. Well, if you start out with her name. So her name comes from the old Irish suil, meaning eye or gap, which possibly came from the Celtic word suli, meaning sun. This is the interpretation of the sun coming into the water. This is why the waters were hot. This is how the Celts saw it. So they saw this as a goddess that made the water hot so that it had the power of the sun in it. Indeed, in Germany, in Altsee, in Rheinhesse, there's a dedication there at the hot sulfur springs there where they were grateful for their restored health to Thulis. It's the only other place in Europe where she is mentioned. But there's not a lot there to know about her. And additionally, there's a goddess called Sulivai, who's worshipped among the Celts and seems to be connected to a group or a trio of goddesses known as the Mothers. But she is connected to these hot springs. And it's interesting when they connected her with Minerva, because Minerva is the Etruscan name of the goddess of wisdom and the arts. And she's connected to the Greek goddess Athene. Minerva's name comes from Memnes, which means to remember. But she was a goddess of the healing. And in her temple north of Rome, in an Etruscan city known as Veii, there were three chambers where there was local sulfurous water. And you can tell it's sulfurous because if you go to Bath, there you see the huge Roman place that's built around the actual bath itself. But if you go to where the source of the water is, it's like a cave opening, and it's all completely golden yellow because of the sulfur that is contained within the water, in much the same way at Glastonbury, the red spring is dyed orange and red. The rocks around them are orange and red for the iron, and the white spring has got calcium deposits, so it's white. So this gives us an idea of the goddesses that were venerated in those places. But in this particular place in Vai, there were three chambers where they found votive offerings. And this is really cute. They had these little terracotta body parts of a hand or a foot or something like that, which indicated the part of the body that was afflicted. And so they would have these little terracotta bits made of the body, and then they would throw them into these sulfur springs and ask Sulis to, or Minerva in this case, to heal them. And it's clear that people were asking to be healed at these places. And we know from centuries of people visiting these springs that it is both physically healing, both emotionally restoring, and in some ways it's well-being. It has a well-being in terms of its mineral value. So the physical evidence is already quite clear. It's interesting that her name is called the Eye, you know, which really, really puts her fair and square with the sun, because the image of the eye is always associated with the sun, such as that all-seeing symbol up in the sky that sees everything and illuminates everything. So we cannot see in darkness, but when the sun comes up, we can see clearly. So this would have also given her not only the health and well-being of hot water, you know, that revitalized and was filled with minerals, it would have also made her a seeress. It would have made her a goddess of prophecy. And so that would have given her the ability to see. So that would also be one of the reasons why some of the things that have been found have been asking for knowledge of the future, or will I meet with Joe? Will Joe marry me? Not in those words, but in Latin words. Will Marcus Aurelius fancy me in the age-old tradition of prophecy? But with Minerva, you're looking at this goddess of wisdom, and this brings us to Athena. And Athena was the Greek goddess of Athens. She was the patron goddess of Athens. And she has got a lot written about her. And we could go on for a lot, but this is not about Athena. But we have to touch on Athena and Minerva, because they do have an influence on the way that Sulis was seen as years went by. Now, Athena was born from the head of Zeus, which represents the power of the mind, the intellect, and the knowledge. And her mother was Metis, who was a goddess of wisdom. Her sacred animal was the owl, and with the eyes of wisdom that can see all around. So again, the eyes that can see everywhere, the eye that Sulis's name means. So this connects her already with Athena and Minerva. And we know also that she had a big struggle with Poseidon, the god of the sea. We're going to come back to that in a little while. But some of the things that were found in the shrine at Sulis, just coming back to Sulis again and what was found at the shrine, were sun wheels. So these were like, just imagine a small wheel. The Celtic symbol for the sun wheel was quite prominent in pre-Roman times. And so these coins were thrown for wishes, as well as various jewels and shoes and molds for making amulets. They were thrown in the waters as well. And the other thing that you and I were just talking about were there were about 130 curse tablets. And these tablets were mostly made from lead, and they were addressed to Sulis themselves. And they relate predominantly from things that were stolen at the bathhouse, like, you know, somebody stole my toothbrush, somebody stole my shower gel, that kind of thing, and somebody stole my bathrobe, and, you know, can you please do something, Sulis, to punish them? And the punishments were horrendous. It's like, you know, can you make them never sleep again until they give me my robe back? You know, can you make sure that they can't walk again until they give me my robe back? But if they give me my robe back, they won't be hurt, or their health will be completely restored, because I don't really want to harm them.
Yeah, it was really something, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, some of the curses were pretty shocking.
Yeah.
But really, the whole thing is, it's about the injustice of it. You know, I went there in good faith and good trust, and somebody was there who shouldn't have been there, who was profane in a sacred place. So Goddess Sulis, this is your beautiful temple, which we venerate and adore, and we've adored you for years, and this person has come in who is profane. Please punish them. Please make them see with your eye, your clear, blazing eyes of the sun, that this is absolutely not right and shouldn't be done. And it's interesting as well, Kim, that these kind of tablets, if you like, these curse tablets, were written in code. So either the letters were written backwards, or they went from right to left, you know, the wrong way round, or from the bottom to the top. It was done in very simple code in order that people didn't know or couldn't see quite clearly what was being said straight away. So there's quite a lot going on there that you can draw from, even though we don't have a story. Certainly with Athene and Minerva, you've got a sense of memory, you've got a sense of intellect, knowledge. You see both the goddesses are shown with a spear and a shield, indicating that they are prepared to do battle. That does connect them with justice in a way, in the sense that they are prepared to defend what is right. And the idea of the Eye of Thulis, you know, means that what they want to be right is the truth. You know, that all-seeing eye that can see what is really there is the truth. And I was going to kind of tell you, if I may, Kim, how I came about Thulis.
I would love that.
Is that okay? Because it's a personal story, and it came in a roundabout way, and I hope everybody that's listening will enjoy this very, very normal, very, very organic way of contacting the goddess. It's not the same as saying I'm going to read about Athene or I'm going to read about Hera. This actually came to me because I was actually studying Athene at the time. I was a devotee of Athene. I had a shrine to Athene, and I was studying her symbols. And I wasn't particularly looking for Thulis at all, but I was intrigued by the fact that Athene had the Medusa head on her breastplate. And I thought, well, you know, I will try and find some pictures of this. Now, we've got to remember, I'm a very old person, and I go back pre-internet. So it was only in books that I could look at this. And this image kept coming up. Now, you'll find nowadays, if you do Google Thulis, and you look online, you'll see this image come up a lot. And it is this Gorgon head. It's got wild hair. It's got wings at the back. It's got snakes all in the beard. And I say beard because the only thing that's strange about this figurehead is that it's male, and Gorgons are notoriously female. So this really intrigued me, and I thought, what on earth is this? And I realized there were quite a lot of kind of ideas about what this was. Now, if we know about Gorgons, we know that the most famous one was Medusa, and this is the one that was on Athene's breastplate. She had hair that was turned to snakes, and her gaze turned men to stone. In fact, her eyes are quite significant. They are called divine eyes. And Athene herself has eyes that are known as flashing eyes. And I think this is quite important in connecting her as well as the healing springs north of Rome in Vae. This is also important to understand that Athena and Minerva had these flashing eyes, divine eyes, indicating a great ability to see through things, which is why people were often turned to stone, because it was like reflecting their soul back at themselves. So if they had no self-awareness, if they hadn't been on that journey, it's quite disconcerting to suddenly come face to face with who you really are and not what you think you are. And as just a very quick digression, Perseus cuts off the head of the Medusa, and her blood falls into the ocean, into the old enemy of Athena, Poseidon. And Poseidon, the ocean, and the blood of Medusa form Pegasus, who is the winged horse of dawn. So there's a wonderful kind of connection there, that out of that horror, out of that blood, that mystery that freezes us and turns us to stone, can come a new dawn. And this is very, very crucial to the healing of Thulis, because the dawn is the sun rising, isn't it? So I'll come back to that in a minute, so hold that in your mind. But coming back to this head at Bath, there are indeed snakes around the head. And there's also a lot of fish symbolism. There's Neptune himself, there's dolphins, half-fish servants, and a small owl, which, as I said before, is sacred to Minerva and Athena. And one of the kind of versions of this figure, apart from being Oceanus or a river figure or a protector of the temple, because this figure sits right at the entrance to the bath at the top of the temple pediment right at the top. And the version I favor is one of Typhon, which is one of the most fearsome monsters of Greek mythology. And he's a son of Gaia, the Mother Earth. But he was a serpent of the deep. He was winged. He had serpents in for his legs and fingers. And he actually represented the fire that was trapped under Mount Etna in Sicily. And he was quite a fearful demon, if you like. So basically what you're looking at is that this is a figure. He's a supernatural being of water, air, earth, and fire. And that makes him a dragon. Now, that fairly blew me away when I realized that. I thought that I get that. I get that you've got this figure of Athena who has dragon energy. She comes from the earth. She's connected to the sky. But she has this dragon power that gives her these divine eyes that flash fire. Now, this all came together, and for many, many, many years later, I was doing a meditation on Thulis, and I inwardly saw her with serpent tail. I thought I actually, at the time, and this is going to make many of you laugh, I actually thought I was thinking of another goddess. I thought, I've obviously got sidetracked here. I'm thinking of my patron goddess, Melusine. And I thought, no, let me start meditation. And I did it again. And again, Thulis came up. And I was focusing on fire. I was focusing on water. But this serpent kept coming up. And then, certainly wasn't something that I had intended to imagine, but the snake skin came off and revealed that the body was made of light. Now, I can remember coming out of that meditation and thinking, oh my goodness, that's absolutely extraordinary. And I started talking to other people who had been to Bath, who are spiritual seekers like myself and priestesses and people like that. And it, one after another, they all sensed a dragon energy at the original source of the spring. And what's also interesting is that one of them had recommended a book to me called, I think it was called Soul Springs. And the author in that book mentions that she feels that the baths in Rome have lost their energy. And I think I get where she means. There's no presence of the goddess there. But if you go to where the actual source of the spring comes out, where it's all gold and yellow, you can actually see an image of that on Google. You're there. There is a presence, and there it is, almost dragon-like. And one lady that I spoke to had actually been physically healed, and another lady had been supported with the healing water through progressing and recovering from cancer. So this kind of came together with me in an understanding of her. Now, some of you may be listening to all that and thinking, okay, I'm following all that, but what does that mean to me? How does that become personal to us? How do we use that? How do we understand that? This is the real treasure in Thulis, if I can begin this particular understanding. There comes a time, and many of you will understand what I'm talking about here, when a poison comes within us, and it's triggered by circumstances or situations or other people, or something that we've done, or something that is done to us. And it's like this poison waits inside us for germination. And this poison that I speak of is our shadow response to life, our primitive response, how we feel when we are betrayed, when we're lied to, when we're hurt, when we're abused, or when we're dismissed. And that hurt, that pain, and particularly injustice, you know, the injustice of this, how could this has happened to me? How could that person have treated me like that? How could this have happened? I haven't done anything to deserve this. I didn't deserve this. The injustice seeps through into our veins like a venom. And it steals away our sense of self. It steals away our well-being and our self-esteem. And it sends us into places that we don't feel we're any longer who we are. It takes us into places where we doubt ourselves, where we're depressed, we have negative thoughts, or we rage, we have anger, we can't get that thought out of our minds, and that anger and that sadness and that pain we carry within us, and we have to carry on with work, and we have to carry on with life, and it builds up inside us, and it spills out, it spits out in rage, or it spills out in a torrent of anger or tears. And sometimes we project that back at other people, blaming them for the feelings that we despise and the pain that we're feeling. And it's not the people or the circumstances. They've already done whatever it is you feel they've done. That is over. That deed has been done. But we carry on that pain for years, doing it to ourselves. And sometimes we work on it, we reason it through, we tell ourselves it's not a good thing to do, it's destroying our lives, it's destroying us, we reason it through and we think we've healed and we go on. And then for those of us that live long enough, you know, 20 years later, something else triggers it and boom, you're back there. And you think, hang on a minute, I've done this, I've been here, I've healed. What is there still to heal? Why is this still coming back? And it's not that you're doing anything wrong. It's not that you're abnormal. It's not that you're bad. And it's not that you're not clever. And it's not that you're not normal. Believe you me. It's a perfectly normal response. That's the whole thing about it. It's a perfectly human response to injustice. Why shouldn't you get angry? And so that justification actually feeds that response a hell of a lot more. But the problem is this primitive response, this poisonous response, isn't healthy for you. And it's not healthy for others. And believe you me, if it goes on long enough, over years, you know, people start saying, you know, let it go. Let it go. You must have met people like that. You must know. You must have even heard it maybe, even to yourself. You know, get over it. Let it go. You know, and you can't. You just can't let it go. And so it starts to destroy you, and it starts to eat away at you. And I've seen enough people in my tarot readings to know that some people 10, 20 years later hold on to that pain. And it's, you know, it's not just about forgiveness. And the reason I say that is because I remember a lady whose daughter had been murdered, and she was asked if she could forgive the murderer. And I'll never forget what she said. She said, "It's not about whether I can forgive. It's about whether he can forgive himself and whether God can forgive him." And in that moment of the most appalling tragedy and sorrow, she saw quite clearly that forgiveness wasn't the issue. That the issue for her was that the poison of bitterness didn't destroy her and her family and what was left. So that in that moment, she treasured her daughter's memory. She treasured the life that they had with her. And she did some healing work to help people that were going through that, but she didn't feel the need to forgive, although I know that forgiveness is crucial to healing. I do know that. And in her mind, though, she'd let that go. So in a sense, she had forgiven him, but she wasn't prolonging the bitterness by that grief and that horror. Now, that is the frozen rage of Medusa. That is that turning to stone. We can't move. We can't do anything. We know what the right thing to do is, but we can't stop ourselves from feeling that. And this is where Sulis comes in, because she can transform that poison into an antidote. That antidote you can give to other people, and you can take it yourself. And she does it two ways. She does it, first of all, through the wisdom of Minerva and Athena. She does it through reason, through understanding, through the patient application of us saying over and over again, I have got to control my feelings. I have got to let this go. I have got to get on with my life. I have got to focus on what is good in my life. I have got to focus on what I can be grateful for. And when we try and do that, we try to see things as they really are. That's the gift of the Eye of Sulis. We start to see things with clarity, with truth. We start to see things that maybe that deed was done years ago, but it's not there now. It's not in our lives now. We may be having to live with the consequences of it, but it's not there now. We can move on from that. And when we can start to just chip away at that stone, the eye, the flashing eyes, the divine eyes of clarity can begin that process of allowing the healing waters of Sulis to flow through. And believe you me, they do. They absolutely, absolutely do. And I had a situation a couple of months ago where I was in that place. I was in that place where I could not move. I knew exactly what the right thing to do was, but I couldn't move. I couldn't transmute that poison, if you like. And so I did that work exactly as I had thought it should be done. I reasoned it through. I knew what the right thing was to do. And as I did that, the strangest thing came to me. I had felt that the poison that was caused by somebody else initially, but by me provoking it, by me not being able to live with it, by me not being able to understand it and rejecting it, I saw that as a poison coming through my veins. And as I did this meditation to feel this, after a discourse of reason and understanding, bringing that light in, I actually saw the light coming through my veins and lighting them up. And all that dark that was going like poison through my veins dissipated completely. And within a very short space of time, in less than a month, I was completely free of the issue, completely free of it. And that had been bothering me for some time. The issue kept raising itself, and the person clearly had issues that they were projecting onto me, and it kept coming back and coming back. And it upset me. It distressed me. It's upsetting to be accused of things you haven't done. It's upsetting to be told about, you know, and that's a normal response, to be upset. Don't feel bad about it, but dealing with it is another thing. And the healing waters of Sulis are absolutely restorative, regenerative, and creative, because it opens you up to the powers of imagination and creativity. And that's another story. That's absolutely another story. That sets you off on a path where you become so immersed on that. The story that led you into that poisonous place of stone, that frozen rage, is just gone. It's just gone. It is that miraculous.
Wow. What a great story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
It's my pleasure. It's a treasure. It's a precious, precious gift of Sulis. There's no question about it. There was something I wanted to say about that with Sulis. I mean, there is this thing that you need to kind of work with it, you know, in terms of injustice, for example. It may well be, and this was something that came to me during that work, was that when we say somebody has done something that's wrong, Sulis sometimes enlightens you. She enlightens you to your part in it. She enlightens you to how you are projecting it. She enlightens you as to how you are building it into something bigger. I mean, in some ways, I think, you know, we build somebody up into some kind of a monster, you know, and I see somebody in front of me in a tarot reading, they're talking about somebody who I'm absolutely convinced that the very worst cards in the deck are going to come out, and quite ordinary cards come out, and I realize that this person has become almost like a devil to this other person, because they can't confront that person. They can't confront the issue. So the person becomes demonic and has a demonic power that actually they don't have. They don't have that power over you, because you can walk away from it, you know, and it's because we give them that power. But Sulis will enlighten you as to your part in it. And that might not be terribly comfortable. Nobody's worth it at the end, because that's part of the path of healing. It really, really is.
Well, I've got a couple of questions, and one, I don't know if I can express this in a way that makes sense, but what do you think, as a person who's worked with the goddess for so long, when there's an original presence, as there was at the spring, and then a whole other group of people come, as the Romans did, and bring Minerva with them, do you think that the energy of Minerva and the energy that was there already that we can call Sulis actually joined together to become something new together? How do you think it really works for the energies themselves?
Well, I think that what happens is that the Romans were very clever. I mean, that they were pagan. You know, they absolutely knew their gods and goddesses inside out. And in the fact that they chose Minerva to go with Sulis, when Minerva had her own sulfur spring, and Minerva was approached for healing, but was also approached for wisdom and clarity, like the eye of Sulis would have given that clarity, because she would have been connected to the sun. Even amongst the ancient Celts, you know, the god of one of the gods, Bran, you know, his head was placed facing the channel of England in order to protect us or warn us of any impending danger. So it was clear that they saw the sun not only as beneficial and well-being and health-giving, but they also saw it as being prescient, being clairvoyant, being able to see, being able to protect, being able to defend, to warn. So I think initially, seeing that this had the same energy, both from a physical sulfur spring level and from their own understanding of what the symbols mean, I think that was pretty smart. I think those goddesses were fairly similar. I cannot imagine at the moment, I can't remember or recall, where that has not been so. Because, you know, the idea is that you're working with the land, you're working with the actual, you know, layout of the land and why that place is significant and why that god or goddess was venerated at that spot. So the Romans didn't want to obliterate that. They wanted to join with that and use that energy as well. So they wouldn't want to do anything that would contradict that. So I think they chose that very well. Whether it becomes something new in subsequent years and traditions, that's possible. That's possible it changes in our mind. That's possible. But the land itself, the energy of nature itself, that stays. That stays what it was.
Right,
we
right.
may interpret it in different ways, but the energy itself is the same. I mean, the very instinctive, intuitive dreams or dream meditations that I had of the snakeskin peeling off and being light, that would have been accessible 1,000 years ago any more than now, because it doesn't tell me any of the language of Athena and Minerva, but it tells me that this was transformative, this was healing, and it was light-giving in the sense of giving you light, giving you healing, giving you peace, giving you clarity. Now, how we choose to explore that is also different. You know, as we're evolving, we're trying to look at this in a spiritual way, not just a physical way. It's not we're just going there for a bath to bathe in the waters or to drink the water. We're trying to look at it as a path, as a way of understanding. So, you know, although they would have, the priests and the priestesses would have done that, not everybody would have done that. Most people would have gone to those places for very simple reasons, to heal their body, to heal their mind, to feel better, you know? Does that answer your question, Kim?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And the way that I approach, the way that I connect to Sulis and the way that I've presented her in this program is that very primal energy that's always been there, no matter how people were, you know, interfacing with her, the energy that's just always been there. It's such a beautiful, pure, primal energy. And that brings me to what you said a few minutes ago about the place where the water actually comes out. And you said that you can see it online. How do we Google that? Because that's kind of what I've been picturing, but I haven't actually seen a picture of it.
Right. Okay, Kim. If you Google source of Bath Spring, you should be able to find it.
And
you'll notice it straight away, because if you look for an opening that is colored golden yellow, you'll recognize it straight away, and then you can go on to whatever page that has. I mean, I can certainly send you a link that you can put on the website
No, I think that's great. I
Would
think
that be
everyone
useful?
Can
okay.
figure. No, I think everyone can figure that out from what you said, and I think that's good that we seek it out. And I thank you for bringing that to my attention, because I wasn't really sure how the waters ended up going into the structures that are built there now. But when I connect to Sulis, I think of how it was for so long and you know, over the centuries. Oh, my gosh, and this time has gone by so fast. Is now a good time to begin our ceremony?
Absolutely.
Did you
ask people to light a candle? Was that?
I did. I told them to bring a candle and a bowl of water if they could, and so those things are ready, I think, to go.
Okay. So the idea is to light your candle before we start. You've got some water in a bowl. I did mention for anybody that does this another time, if you have a floating candle, that's really, really works well, because that's the fire on the water, and that has really been very helpful to me in visualizing Sulis. And also, if you have a piece of paper, write down what you wish to ask of her. So that's useful too. But for now, it's enough that we are going to light the candle and place it near the water so that you can see the reflection in the water. And the main thing to start with is that we define this this ceremony, the purpose of it being to connect with the goddess Sulis and to call upon her for healing and awakening of ourselves and for others. And then if we light our candles and allow ourselves to gaze at the candle and the reflection and take a few deep breaths. And as you breathe in, visualize connecting with the earth through your feet on the ground and visualize drawing up that profound connection with the earth, with the dragon energy of the earth. And visualize drawing its energy up into your body and in the out-breath, releasing your thoughts, breathing in and restoring energy through your body, and release. Breathing in and release. Breathing in and release. And bring your attention to within yourself. Bring your mind to a still point and focus on the reflection of the fire, the candle in the water. And think about your connection with the goddess Sulis. We're going to call upon her. And we say, goddess of splendor, goddess of light, we call on thee to hear our plight. Radiant Sulis of healing springs, of light and warmth with spiritual wings. Clear our minds, illusion dispel. Heal our hearts with fiery spell. Sulis, heal us, hear our prayer. Dragon goddess whose power is fair. Bring your blessings to those in need. With healing power, your wisdom we heed. Goddess of splendor, goddess of light, we call to thee in dark and light. And now, visualize golden rays of light filling the water from the reflection of the candle, as if Sulis herself is present in the fiery reflection. Her healing powers of light dispelling darkness, filling the bowl with healing power. And if you like, you can place your hands around the bowl and visualize this healing light magically coming through your hands, through your arms, through your body, restoring and revitalizing every molecule and cell in your body with golden, sparkling, revitalizing energy. Allow it to spread through your arms and your hands, giving your hands the power to heal as you stroke your pet animal, as you stroke a beloved's hair. But the true healing power is the power of love. And feel that golden, sparkling energy filling your back to make you brave and strong, to stand up and defend that which is true. And fill in your legs and your feet so that it will take you to places that are honorable and good for your well-being. And imagine the gold sparkling energy filling your chakra centers, your root center, to keep you connected to Mother Earth, to your sense of being, your sacral center, your place of creativity, of sexuality, your solar plexus, your sense of self, your confidence. And feel it flooding your heart with a golden warmth, healing it of pain, healing it of sorrow, healing it of stress. Let all that wash away. Let it go. Feeling it coming up to your throat, allowing you to speak truth, to speak kindness, to speak the healing power of Sulis, and up to your eyes that they may flash with the divine fire of truth, that you may see truth, know truth, understand truth, and let it fill all over your head and body, flooding it now with a golden energy above your head to connect with Sulis herself and spreading out into your room and beyond, your family, your friends, and your community. Allow that golden healing energy to course through your blood and bones and flow out into the streams around you and the rocks and the earth, like the healing waters of Sulis. And when you feel that flowing, consider the reason that you wrote earlier as to what you would wish to ask Sulis for. And if it's to heal another, visualize seeing the person you wish healing for in that light in front of you, and see that light cleansing, purifying, and healing their pain or their sorrow. And if it is for you, place your fingers or hands into the water and place the water on that part of you that requires healing, holding both hands over that part and sealing it, both for another person. If you are doing this for another person, place both your hands in front of you and seal it. And if it's for yourself, place both those hands on the part that needs healing. If it's your mind with stress, place it on your head or your heart from sorrow or pain. And say, Sulis, heal me, hear my prayer. Sulis, heal me, hear my prayer. Sulis, heal me, hear my prayer. Allow that energy just to sink in, to deeply and profoundly penetrate your body with well-being, with goodness, with joy, and with love. And when you feel that has been answered, visualize it settling in your body and becoming part of who you are. And know that you can do this exercise, this ceremony, at any time. You can call upon her. And bring both your hands over each other, over your heart. And bow your head and say thank you to the goddess for her help. We must never forget to be grateful, whether we know or understand what healing has taken place. And you can leave the candle to continue the healing energy to flow through your room for the rest of the day or the evening. Or you can blow it out. And with the water can be sprinkled around the room for purification, or it can be added to your bath next time you have a bath. And if you place candles around the bath and then pour that water in, you will indeed have a very magical, foolish healing bath where you can call upon her again. There's no reason why you couldn't call upon her in a bath, even though you may not be at the foolish spring itself. She is the power that resides in the combination of warmth and heat and water and healing. So if you add that healing energy from that magical bowl into it, you will be creating a fertile astral place for her to visit. And you can let your imagination and creativity take hold and perhaps add a citrine or topaz crystal into the water in the bottle and use it when you need some soulless energy for healing and well-being. And place it maybe in the sunlight at midday for half an hour to gain the rays of the sun from it. Perhaps even at the summer solstice to make it a magical time. There's no ending as to where the magic of soulless could take us, but more than anything, I do hope it takes you towards the healing of the self, because if we can heal ourselves, we are capable of healing others, and that is a very precious gift. So I hope you enjoyed that ceremony for Sulis.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Suzanne.
You're very welcome.
And I love the practical suggestions at the end, because I can really feel the value in those, and adding that water to the bath would be wonderful. I'm going to do that for sure. Thank you.
These kind of waters that we create can be very, I mean, I've done waters like that for other times, certainly with Melusine and Isis. You take a significant time and you go to a sacred spring wherever you are, and you collect some of that water, and you take it home in a bottle, and you place the bottle either in moonlight or daylight, depending on what energy you are trying to call upon. And you can take a connecting stone, if you like, or a herb, and place that in the water, and that can be, you know, become this magical water that you can then use whenever you want to connect with that deity in some ways. So it's very, very useful. In terms of healing therapies, if we have any therapists healing with that, this can be a very useful thing to use, to sprinkle water around the massage bed or the Reiki bed. And you could even use your Reiki symbols, if you wanted, in conjunction with it. This is a goddess of healing. She's not going to object to other other symbols of healing. She's going to work with them. I love that. I love the idea that we can do that.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Well,
you can create a sun wheel. Sorry?
Well, please go on.
You could create a sun wheel and hang that up in the window to attract sort of the eye of the sun, if you like, and then place that in the water if you make it a very small amulet. And that can lend that energy to it. In particular, if you can find out where there are sulfur springs near you, it may well be that you'll find out a lot more than just where those springs are, but visiting them would be interesting to see what the indigenous people of wherever you are call that spring, and who is venerated or what is venerated around there. And whilst it may not have the name of Suez, it will still be that energy. You know, the Celts will call it Bulis, and, you know, the Romans will call it Minerva, but it's by a different language. That's all. The actual energy itself is the same.
Oh, and you'll feel that resonance. That's beautiful. Thank you. Oh, I
and I tell you what she loves. She loves flower remedies. Flower remedies and homeopathy. So she loves all kind of remedies where water is used to enhance the memory, remember I said Minerva's name, represented to remember. Now, this is really interesting because they've recently discovered scientifically that we hold in our bodies trauma from previous generations, and they found that out from Holocaust relatives who had, grandchildren who were not part of the Holocaust but had eating disorders. So they knew that it was carried down in the kind of molecules and body that were represented by the DNA. And so water remedies that are like bark flower or homeopathy, where you take a drop of the essence and then you add more water, you're enhancing it, you're magnifying it. That is exactly how healing waters work. So by the magnification of it. So it doesn't matter how much you have or how little of it. A little goes a very long way.
Thank you for sharing that. And also I want to thank you, Suzanne, for the wonderful bonus that you created for us. It was such a wonderful gift. And I'm not sure everyone has seen it, but it's on your Sulis portal page. So you'll see it by Suzanne's picture. It's a special bonus PDF called The Healing Favors of Sulis. So make sure that when you're on the Sulis portal, you download that and get a chance to look at that. And also I want to let you know how to connect with Suzanne. There's a link there on the page as well, but it's suzannecorby.co.uk. And tell us more about what you do at your site, Suzanne.
On my website?
Right.
Sorry, were you asking what I did on my website, Kim?
Yeah, what you offer on your website, right, if people visit you.
Oh, right, okay. I guess for people in England, there are workshops, and there are workshops on the Wheel of the Year, and there are tarot readings. But I do Skype readings anywhere in the world, and I do offer a Connecting with the Goddess course that takes a couple of years to go through. Initially, it was made for a 9-month course, but I felt that the material was so profound, and people were taking much longer than that to go through it. So in general, it takes about 3 years to go through. But it's a profoundly transformative course that can be done through Skype. But that's quite difficult. Not everybody can do that. That's quite a difficult thing to. But I support it wholeheartedly. There's a lot of email and written and supportive contact with all students that take that. And at the moment, my next opportunity for a student, because I only take one at a time, my next available opportunity for a student is in April. So that will be when my last student finishes. So it's quite a limited.
Wow, and you do one at a time. Wow. Stuff at your website, though. You've got podcasts and
I've got podcasts.
Stuff about tarot and all kinds of neat stuff. Yeah. So,
thank you, Kim. I forget. There's so much. I forget.
You know, I want to encourage everyone to check it out and stay connected with you. I've been so happy since I met you, and it's been a wonderful being connected to you through the year. So I want to let everyone know how they can connect with you. And thank you so much for being with us here. It's just been so great to have you, Suzanne. Is there anything that you would like to add before we have to close today?
Well, I'd really just like to thank you. I know I thank you every time I come on, but what you're doing is a really amazing program. And I think it really offers people an opportunity to get to understand how to connect with the goddess. It's one thing reading a book. It's another thing knowing how to connect. And with the support of different teachers who are skilled in that connection, who have done that path, who are able to guide and steer people through that process, and you've put all that together through your work, that's quite some deal. That's not a small thing. And I can see how the energy of the divine feminine, which is so badly needed in our world today, so badly, badly needed, and is definitely emerging. She's definitely emerging. That, you know, I do feel this is a vehicle, and I understand why you call your website the Guardian Gateway. It most definitely is a gateway into the world of the divine feminine. I do wish everybody that is following the program the very best of well-being and good fortune and happiness in their path during the program. I think it's a very valuable program. So thank you to those for listening, and thank you to you, Kim, for offering that opportunity to people.
Oh, thank you, Suzanne. Thank you. It's been so wonderful to spend this hour together. And as we close today, I'd like to invite you all to take another deep breath and close your eyes and send love to the others from our hearts as we gently squeeze the hands that have linked us together throughout this call and then let go for now. We thank Sulis, we thank the earth, and we thank the presence of the divine feminine everywhere. To everyone listening, I'm so glad to have your presence with us on this journey. So thank you again, Suzanne, and thank you everyone for holding this sacred space and joining with us, bringing the divine feminine presence all the way into our lives. Until next time, this is Kim Wilborn wishing you all love and abundance.